Avatar is back.
This is Appa, my flying bison.
Right. And this is Katara, my flying sister.
That's right, I'm Sokka. It's pronounced with an Akka.
My name is Toph Beifong, and I'll need 4 tickets.
My name is Zuko, Prince of the Fire Nation, and heir to the throne.
Don't flatter yourself.
You lost me at Zuko.
Zuko, you look so cute.
I can tell you're lying.
Why would I let go of Katara? I love her.
Anybody got a problem with that?
You'll have to leave now. Your lemur is harassing our sparrow keys.
Those are enemy birds.
Even that oaf knows to concentrate on what he's doing.
He does have a heart, doesn't he?
Come on! Shuffle on, I get you.
Stay flaming. Now, check this out.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender podcast for DongBuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Abby.
Hi.
Ruth.
Salute.
Kevin.
Hello.
Steph.
Hello.
Shay.
Hi.
Joe.
What he said.
Okay, and making her first appearance, Alisa.
Booyah, yo.
And Alisa is Alisa Christopher on DA, so yeah, I'm sure a lot of you know her, and if you don't, check out her stuff on DeviantArt, it's really good. So send questions to us at podcast.gufang.net, send us questions about Avatar for the mailbag segment, and you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The podcast page is dongbufang.net/podcast. So today's podcast, we have two pretty good discussion topics here, and I actually think this is going to be one of our better podcasts. We'll start off with news and views, DongBuFang Avatar, move on to a 314 and 315 episode title discussion. So if you haven't heard those yet, we'll say them in the news. And our second discussion will be the middle of season 1 and episodes 107, which is the Spirit World, to 114, the Fortune Teller. So all of those episodes are between there. And, for some pretty good episodes in there. I think it's the best of the series. And then we'll have a mailbag and we'll close things out. So let's move on to our Avatar and DongBuFang news. Okay, and your DongBuFang news for this week. DongBuFang's winter event, the most wonderful time of the year, is here. We'll be announcing the 313 and 317 titles all throughout the winter. Currently, we have just revealed the 314 and 315 episode titles. 314 is The Boiling Rock, Part 1, and 315 is The Boiling Rock, Part 2. This will be discussed more in the next segment. So yes, two-part episode there.
And in your Simmering Rock.
Simmering, yes. And in your Avatar news for this week, Book 3, Volume 3 will be coming out in April, according to an advertisement in Nick Magazine. So not official yet, but probably April makes a lot of sense, too. And 314 thankfully did not air in Canada, so that's good.
Kobe!
So yes, we don't have to deal with another episode leaking online and everything for a week. And,
I was actually looking forward to that, I gotta be honest.
Yeah, I was getting ready for it.
Well, Ruth is the only one that should be watching it, guys.
Hey, I went to Canada once in my life, so I
then you can go to Canada and then watch it there. But yeah, so as for air dates, future air dates, Lisa's been doing some great air date tracking based on Nick and YTV replaying episodes in order, starting from 301. So it's, as me and Jacob have been saying, it looks like late March. For when 312 might air in the US, and then
too long.
314.
It's gonna air
as long as YTV doesn't screw up again. 314 in Canada may be early April, ish, as long as they coincide their airings, which would make most sense. But then again, Nick and YTV have not made any sense so far, so you never know.
Well, and Nick UK makes even less sense.
That's true. Two episodes a day. Let's catch up all in 1 week. So yeah.
I guess
who knows what Nick UK will do? Nick UK could air the finale and then the rest of the episodes the day after. So
absolutely.
If they did that, I swear to God, I would watch him.
Yes. I know you would. So yeah.
And I wouldn't hesitate to spoil it either. No, I would.
Yes, you would, because I would like ban you everywhere. So yeah, let's move on.
No,
to...
I'd spoil it to you, not the public.
I would like to
screw the
you.
Public.
314
so still ban you for
titles.
It.
Yeah, I'd ban you anyway. Thank you. As said earlier, the 314 title was revealed to be The Boiling Rock Part 1, and the 315 title is The Boiling Rock Part 2. So, as most of you guys just heard this today, what are some of your initial reactions to The Boiling Rock?
I think it's a little anticlimactic. Fire Nation. Anticlimactic.
Anticlimactic, okay.
Anticlimactic. I don't know.
Well, it reminds me of that scan from the All Avatar magazine. Talked about a boiling lake.
The first connection, the scan to the Aaron Ehaz in the magazine, The Boiling Lake. He wrote about that being one of the new locations. So that's the obvious connection there.
And if you want my opinion, I think that they might as well named it the Blade of Grass, because the Boiling Rock tells us nothing.
Well, we'll see, because we have a whole 20 minutes on seeing what it does mean. So hopefully it does mean something, Joe. So yeah, the anticlimactic, because the fake titles me and Jake made, we just couldn't make them as weird as The Boiling Rock. I mean, we tried, but couldn't really get
Well,
there.
You did pretty good with The Enlightened, I'd have to say.
Yeah, The Enlightened, and that was an accidental title. It was like...
Yeah, I was saying, oh, I feel enlightened now.
And I was like, that's it.
That. Yeah, but if you named it The Scientific Revolution, I'd have to call you a geek.
Okay, that doesn't make any sense in Avatars.
Oh, because you didn't learn then social studies, how the Enlightenment and the Scientific Revolution were...
Yeah,
like,
and but the Enlightenment also talked about Nirvana and the whole unlocking the chakras leading to Nirvana and therefore Enlightenment, so...
Yeah.
I say that...
It's more of a chakra connection title, but the title's The Boiling Rock, so... You could say it's general, but then when you guys haven't heard the rest of the titles for Season 3, they get even worse and more general, until you've no idea what the heck they're talking about.
What is it, like the piece of paper?
No, it's just weird. I mean, I don't think we're doing fake titles anymore, because it's just too hard to match them.
Yay, vagueness!
Can I make a comparison here?
Yes.
Sure.
Let's pretend we were spoiled, and we heard the episode title, Bato of the Water Tribe. Or is that the right... What was the name of that title? What was it?
It was Bato of the Water Tribe, yeah.
Bato of the Water Tribe. Well, all that really tells us is there's a guy from the Water Tribe. Doesn't really tell us there's a bounty hunter after them. Doesn't tell us anything else really about the episode except for one little minor thing. So
sure.
I wouldn't judge an episode by its cover or its title.
Well, and I think what happened was Mike, Brian, and Aaron just came down hard on the titles because they... They didn't want the... I don't think they wanted the end of the season to be spoiled through the titles.
Because they knew you were
leaking it, right, yeah.
They've known that since forever, so yeah.
Well, also, if you consider most of the titles are actually quite literal, we all assumed when the headband was first released as a title that it was going to be about Toph's headband. Nobody would have ever thought that it was actually Aang's headband.
Yeah, until we saw that photo of him, but yeah.
Wait, did I not say that it was a headband to cover him up a while ago, or I don't know?
I don't know, you may have said that, actually, but...
But can I ask something?
And it's speculation, yeah, exactly. Most of the time, we over-speculate on a lot of the titles, and most of them were really literal. But what I'm saying here is that the titles don't compare them to earlier in Season 1-3, because I think they had a production break between 311, 312, and I think they just made the titles. They decided to use a different format, I guess. And the episodes also are probably going to get weirder, so.
I personally like the vague titles. I don't know. I just like vagueness in general, I guess.
This podcast, like,
it's like
and
titles, more to speculate.
Since you just said that, though, what you could have been doing before is saying something like having titles that all are irrelevant and having one title that everyone's going to, like, a few titles, like, four titles that are really, like, relevant to the show, and you know how you said these titles are general, have six other general titles.
Well, see, that's the thing.
So people just look at it as they're like, oh, they're just trying to screw with us.
Yeah, it's hard to make up the general titles. It's like, if we made up general titles, we'd just be making them up. We wouldn't know what we're referring to or anything, because we don't really
make
know
something
what
like,
titles refer to. But anyway, this isn't the point of the segment. So next
the blade
thing,
sharpeners.
The spirit.
The next
the
big
spirit.
Spirit. The next big thing is that The Boiling Rock is two parts, two separate episodes, and it's 314, 315. So initial reactions to that. What do you guys first think of when you heard that it was two parts?
That
it must be epic
to have a two-parter. That's quite interesting how we had another two-parter after another two-parter.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, hold on.
We had that back in Season 2 also.
I can't ask this question. Ruth, you sure?
No, Joe. Later. So yeah, two-parter. See, me and Jake have been comparing this two-part episode to the Winter Solstice since we first heard it, because this isn't a mid-season special like the two in season two were, or Day of Black Sun is. It's kind of like a mid before or after one. So I'm pretty sure they're gonna air separately. It's not gonna be an hour. Pretty sure it's speculation there, and I think they're going to be, you know, the Winter Solstice, as we'll get into this, Steph, because those are the two of the episodes we're discussing next. The Spirit World was an episode, and the Avatar Roku was another. It was like two separate plots, but they're connected. So they're not all going to be connected, like
Siege of the North would have been.
Yeah, like just right one after. I mean, they're going to be one after the other, just not the same point or something, the same. See, Winter Solstice changed locations. You have to assume that they won't change locations here, but something that they're not going to be directly connected together. So it's two separate episodes, but it's, like, not. So I guess if you guys understood that, then you're good at understanding me, because I didn't explain that well.
Do we know anything solid, actual, for sure, except for the title?
No, we do not.
Okay.
We do know that there's nothing after part one and part two, which is interesting. So it's not the Boiling Rock Part 1, the beginning or something. It's just Part 1. And there's no parentheses, because they've been all over their place with their two-parter formats. So who knows. Okay, so now the bulk of this discussion. What does the Boiling Rock refer to?
A spa?
I think, well, I can tell you that there's going to be a rock in there, and it may be heated.
Oh, that's some pretty deep insight there, Joe.
But maybe a volcano.
Okay, so a volcano. But here's what almost everyone's first reaction was to Boiling Rock, looking over the fandom and everything, that it's the prison. Because in...
What?
The prison. A prison. Something. Because...
Yeah, a prison where they're keeping Suki, Hakoda, and all the rest of the prisoners.
Yeah, we'll get into the specifics there, but... Right. Let me get my magazine out for an exact quote.
How does a Boiling Rock refer to a prison? I just don't get the connection.
If I find my magazine, I'll tell you.
It's like the Rock, you know, the prison, the Rock. Basically, you know, of a boiling lake. Can't escape from the prison because they're surrounded by a giant boiling lake.
Okay, I can't find my thing right now, but...
The quote was, we'll see an island in the middle of a boiling rock, is all he said.
Okay, yeah, so people assume...
Okay.
Island in the middle...
I want to say that it's a volcano, and I don't believe anyone else. It's a volcano.
Okay, so yeah, island in the middle of a boiling lake was what Aaron said in the magazine. Which is interesting that it says rock, so most people say rock refers to the actual island, which would make sense, but it could be something deeper there.
Right, well, because I had actually thought the lake was going to be a more acceptable title, just given Aaron's description of the location, than the boiling rock. Because I was expecting, if we're going to have an episode about a boiling lake, it'll be called The Boiling Lake.
Yeah, so, actually, that was our first fake title. We were like, should we do that to them, make two titles so similar? But no, I decided not to do that. But yeah, The Boiling Lake makes more sense because that was what referred to in the magazine, but Aaron probably switched it up to, like, not make the title as obvious, I guess.
Right.
So, yeah, most people are connecting this to the prison. And with the prison, most people connect it to Suki. And there's also the connection to the invasion force. And I still have my little fake bet with Kevin that Suki's dead, but...
Oh, no.
No! Suki's alive, dude. She's just been tortured and brainwashed, but she's alive,
She's been tortured and brainwashed. So she'll come
out. She's too valuable to just kill off. She's like...
Well, I could easily argue against that. She's only appeared in three episodes.
Well, my issue with her being killed off is the fact that we'd lose the emotional impact of not actually seeing her die on screen, basically. When Yue left for the spirit world, she was in Sokka's arms, and that was really deep stuff. Compared to if we lost Suki in a flashback, it'd be really kind of weak.
That's true.
Well, and not only that, but also, like, Azula loves... She hides emotionally. She likes hanging people kind of over their head. It would be kind of useless to do that if she's dead. Listen to me anyway, because she's dead.
I know she's coming back.
Yeah, okay, I've got to say.
Kevin, if Kevin feels this...
None.
Trust me.
Okay, let me make my point here.
No doubt about it.
Most likely in the storyline, it would make sense for Suki to come back. But I'm looking... I'm looking at what? 9 episodes left? And we still have to figure out Omashu, the Southern Water Tribe, maybe we'll go back to the Northern Water Tribe, go to the rest of the Kingdom.
For me.
There's no time for little Suki in there. I think that Omashu is more important.
You come
than
up with any form of public humiliation you want, and I will bet myself on it. If she does not come back, I will do that.
Well, I don't know. Her name's obviously going to come back, but
guys, I think we could all agree that we'd rather have Haru killed off than Suki. Right?
I agree. Yes.
Amen.
The last thing we need. The last thing we need is another guy in the Jackson Five. I mean, come on.
God, shut up. Okay, so
don't hit the stash, yo.
Okay.
A, B, C, it's easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's enough. Okay, so yeah. The invasion force captured within Ba Sing Se. Is there any possibility that they could be within the boiling rock?
Yeah, probably. They gotta stash them somewhere.
See, here's the main problem I have with this. What's the point of bringing them back right now? I mean, they free them, and then they still have 4 episodes until the finale. I mean, what do they do?
Yeah,
well, epic battle!
Be as useless as Haru is right now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm more useless, probably. Yeah.
I told you, I don't think
it's
Miami.
Likely at all that the prisoners will come back. But then again, if it's a prison, why wouldn't they come back? So,
well, I think they're going to have to spend a couple of episodes getting to the Fire Nation. So 317 to 321 is going to be all one big thing, right? So
you're going to have 318, but... It won't take them that long to get in again.
When they joined the Water Tribe people at the beginning of this season, why did they have to leave them for the invasion force? Why did they have to go off on their own? Because they don't want to write for those people. They'll do the same thing again. Yeah. They'll rescue everybody, they'll go off on their own, the kids will go off on their own, they won't have to deal with it.
That wasn't the explanation, but
I honestly don't see them springing everybody from prison until the finale, so...
Yeah, I can see, a big Narnia, though, it's just... epic.
I can see the Sozin's comment coming in the finale. That always,
We'll get to that. That's okay, so.
You know something, don't you?
I know something, I do. Okay, so.
Well, I know many things.
Here's another theory, that the boiling route could be the White Lotus base.
Ah.
Why not? Well,
or maybe the boiling rock is Ursa.
Maybe the boiling rock is Follow the Outline. So, yeah, it's, if it's a White Lotus base, then...
Oh, crap.
Why?
Well,
I don't know. I don't understand
this.
Because
it's in secrecy?
Okay, how about this? Where is the Boiling Rock located? This is an important question.
Boiling Island.
In the Fire Nation.
Yeah, I mean... Did Aaron say in the magazine all these locations were in the Fire Nation?
Always get it.
No, but on Nick.com, their map for every season, for season 1 and season 2, has had the entire world. But if you look at the map of season 3, it's only the Fire Nation.
Yes,
so, as a primary location, they won't be going outside the Fire Nation.
Well, by going to the Western Air Temple, they've already left their map. So, I think that was just...
It's actually on the map. It is on the map.
It is, but I don't know. I think that was just for the first half. I mean, you know, here's what I think. I think they have to go outside that general Fire Nation location at least once. I mean,
they certainly could, but, I mean, if you consider that during Season 2, we saw a lot of locations, because of Zuko's B-plots, that weren't on the map, like, as far as the dots go. So, yeah, there could be B-plots that aren't necessarily in the Fire Nation, but I don't think there'd be any A-plots.
Okay, that's a good point, but...
Yeah, we might be seeing Boomy.
Well, what's the B-plot? Because, I mean, everyone assumes that... No, Boomy, of course. But everyone assumes that Zuko's joining the gang, so who could be the B-plot? I mean, we established in a past podcast that Iroh...
Who's the B-plot?
Iroh.
That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, exactly. Iroh may be the B-plot this second half, because, I know, it's... We think that...
What's the role of the B-plot?
You don't know? Okay, we should explain A-B plot. A-plot is, the main focus of an episode, and the B-plot is, secondary and not involving Aang and everything. So, I mean, almost all the A-plots are Aang and all the B-plots are...
I don't think they're going to have a B-plot for the next episodes. I think it's going to be straightforward.
No, they'll have B-plots eventually. So, I mean, it's going to be concentrated, of course, because everyone's in one location at first, but as we start...
Well, I think that they're going to merge them, because, they always have A-plots.
They won't merge. Well, who they have to merge? They have to... They can only add people... They can only break off. They can't really add people anymore, so they're gonna have B-plots.
Yeah?
But
what about C-plots?
Thank you for that, Joe. But
in writing, they generally try and limit it to two plots, just because if you get too many subplots going along, then it winds up being entirely too hard to follow.
Yeah, then they...
See, I like calling it sub-stories, because A plot, B plot...
They said A, B plot on the DVD, okay? That's what we're calling it.
See, that's why...
It's a wider term.
Yes.
But subplot equals B plot.
These communists, they're poisoning your mind.
Shut up! Oh my god. So, yeah. Okay, I think the A plot... I don't know. See, the rest of the season, I'm still really confused on what's going to happen, because... Like, where do they go? Do they just stay at the Western Air Temple the whole entire time? I mean, they're not going to go back to the Fire Nation for a while, because they've nothing else to do there yet, so...
Well, we eventually know that they might end up in the Fire Nation.
Well, yeah, obviously at the end of Season 3, they'll be... I don't think they're going to enter the Fire Nation until the finale.
Well, they're already in the Fire Nation.
Think about is what things do we have to tie up? Like,
yes.
We still have that White Lotus tile. We still have Boomy.
We have too many things. That's the thing. People are going to be disappointed because they're not going to tie up every little thing.
This is why I think the finale is going to be horrible, because they left too many things open.
No, like, see, that. Don't let that ruin your finale, guys. Don't overspeculate. Okay, we're going to overspeculate on the finale, but don't, like, overexpect. Don't...
You know...
Yeah.
As a Josh Whedon fan, I'm actually kind of used to having some things that are left open, and as a fan artist, and I'm sure any fanfic writers out there, it's actually kind of more fun, because if the writers of the show, if the creators of the show leave something open, then that allows the fans to put in their own endings, compared to with J.K. Rowling putting in her epilogue at the end of Harry Potter, a lot of fans were upset, because it seals off any fan creation that could possibly be created.
I was mostly upset because it was retarded.
Oh, I loved that ending. See, I like happy endings, but see...
Mongies.
See, they don't need to worry about fan fiction. I don't want the writers to say, oh, it's going to stop the fans from creating. No, they've got to do what they think is best. So,
but the other thing is also the fact that the writers want to leave it open for themselves also to go back and write further stories. Even if it's not necessarily about Aang and Zuko, they still need to write other stories because Nick is pushing them to write more stories.
Oh, well...
More or less.
Yeah, I could go nothing, but yes, here's why there's not going to be an epilogue more than a month. Because while they were in the process of writing the end of the season, a season 4 was still an option and was even being planned. So that is why there will not be an epilogue very long. And that's why they will leave points open, and for that reason. Because they even though almost definitely we're not going to get a season 4, they could still go back to the series. And I actually think they're going to do specials at some point, which would be
That they should. I really think they should do a season 4. They need to be more intelligent.
Yes, Nick wanted a season 4, the crew wanted a season 4, Mike and Brian didn't want a season 4.
But so anyway.
Yeah. Oh yeah? Well,
I will have points open, but there are direct points that they directly went on, and I have a We know we're going to see it again, because they directly pointed at it.
Yes. Like, okay, right. Now I could argue that Omashu won't come back, but the White Lotus was directly left open, so they're going to revisit that. I mean, Omashu, Boomy served his purpose. They wait and listen, they found Toph. I mean, you could argue that... I mean, it would obviously be best if they went back.
He directly said, I'll see you again when the time is right. In the comments.
Yeah, I could argue that, but...
Well, that could imply that Boomy breaks himself out and comes and joins them in the Fire Nation.
Wait, why wouldn't they... Wait, if the comet is kind of like Earth, why wouldn't Boomy not be able to bend the comet?
Okay, stop. Because the comet's kind of in space, and it's different. So? See, that's the difference between fire and Earth. Fire's drawing heat from the comet. They're not taking the fire off the comet and using it. It's just the intense heat, I guess. Earth doesn't...
Or the radiation, if you want to go with
radiation.
Theory.
Earth doesn't draw from anything but Earth. Guys, don't always... We shouldn't be assuming that the finale is going to be Susan's Comet. I mean, we got to leave some speculation open for later podcasts.
Right. Never mind the Simon & Schuster book titled Susan's Comet Final Battle.
You never know. These books, you never know. Seriously. So,
true.
Gotta move on.
Guys, I have a theory, actually. You ready? You know how... I'm looking at this now... You know how Iroh is kind of just like, he's out of prison, but we don't know anything about him, right?
Yeah.
We know nothing.
Yes.
And they have this White Lotus tire. Again, we know nothing.
Okay, we've done the theory.
This is different. No, it's different. Totally different than what you would
then
think.
Then hurry up.
They're somehow gonna have to communicate with the White Lotus indirectly to know when the Avatar's invading, and it's gonna be the White Lotus that frees the prisoners. So the White Lotus is gonna have a giant role in ending this war when it comes to freeing prisoners, towns, or it just causing trouble in the Fire Nation.
That is a good segue into our next thing. That was actually pretty good. What could happen within 3:14-3:15? And the second thing I have here is Iroh busting out the prisoners, and Iroh contacting the White Lotus. So what Joe's theory is saying, is this right? Iroh contacts the White Lotus, and the White Lotus.
No, Iroh is the White Lotus. Somehow the gang has to contact the White Lotus.
Oh, so you know, who's busting out the prisoners?
The White Lotus.
Is Iroh within the White Lotus?
Sure.
So Iroh and the White Lotus are busting out the prisoners.
The main point is the White Lotus is going to have a role in ending this war.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I don't think that... See, here's the possibilities for what could happen. Prisoners could get busted out. Iroh could bust out prisoners. Iroh could contact the White Lotus. I don't think any of those three things will happen, actually.
Well, here's how I look at it. You have their invasion. Now let's look at it numbers and odds. With the little people they have, you really think they could defeat the whole Fire Nation? You even think they have anywhere near a chance?
Joe.
The White Lotus is bigger.
Avatar State, but let's move on.
Right. I totally agree.
Right, but that's what 3:16's for, you know.
Actually, I'm thinking 3:17, 3:18 there, so...
I thought you said 3:17 was going to be just filler.
Yeah, mommy.
That's true.
Oh, I got
3:17 is filler, so it's oh yeah.
Like I said, 3:16.
3:16. No, it's gonna be 3:18. See, they're not gonna visit the Avatar State until the finale. I hate that.
Yeah.
Can I just explain something quick? Let me finish, even though I have improper grammar. But, anyways, here's what I'm thinking though. You know how like they gotta like contact them. You know. Look at how in 3:10, 3:11, we had maybe, 50 guys in the invasion force versus, and if you look in the intro, there are like thousands of people in the Fire Nation. And then you have this White Lotus.
Okay, that brings up a good point. How are they going to get their army? But that's not the point today. I mean, yes, White Lotus could help in getting
the White Lotus is going to help, like, fight.
So you think this will be a White Lotus rounding up troops episode? So.
No, the White Lotus is going to, like, fight with the invasion forces. The White Lotus and the Invasion Force will meet up.
That's a good theory.
And it'll be called...
Okay, but now you're getting to finale stuff.
And then it'll be called the White Forces. The White Forces.
The White Forces? Okay, so what are you referring to? 3:14, 3:15, Joe. 3:14, 3:15.
The White Forces is the new invasion
force. Okay, you're not saying anything. So yeah, anyone have any theories they can think of like off the top of their head right now?
The symbolism with the boiling rock, it's a sea boiling for fire, and rock...
Maybe they mean Shosen's Comet?
So, the connection between the Fire Nation and the Earth Kingdom, I'm sort of thinking between Iroh and Bumi. Because there are two things...
No. Bumi is not coming back in this episode.
The super duo of Iroh and Bumi. That would be amazing,
well, but it's not going to happen.
Don't forget, you know, the whole Toph-Sokka relationship that the fans are all, ooh, I know, it's the boiling rock because their relationship's heating up.
No. It's
that's
Toko.
Just a joke, though.
Boiling rock is Toko, because you have the rock, which is Toph, and the boiling, which is Zuko. There you go. Okay.
Oh.
See, doesn't that explain a little better?
Yeah, better than the Sokka, definitely.
So it's not going to be
And it still leaves Sokka open for Suki, so I'm happy with that.
It's not a shipping episode, guys. Okay. So yeah, okay, here's
everything
something
is shipping, Dylan.
We need
everything.
To reveal. Here's something that could change everything, all of your speculations and everything. I'm about to reveal the writers for 3:14 and 3:15. The writer of 3:14 is Mei Chan, someone
that
we've never heard of because this is her first episode writing an episode. And the writer of 3:15 is Josh Hamilton, who is the writer's assistant in the first season. So these two, I mean, you have a new writer and a person who doesn't normally do important episodes.
So it means the episodes are going to suck.
So what you think is that these might not necessarily be important. That's what comes from the writers, I guess. I mean, it's hard to draw stuff from who's writing it, but this is like.
Well, who was that writer in season one you guys were talking about in the podcast last week who only wrote that one episode?
That's true. Ian Wilcox wrote. Nick Malice wrote 104. So it was the
See, now this is thing. Just infuriating, though. They got like a couple of episodes left with so much to accomplish, and they're just dilly dallying, taking the sweet time. Getting a nice tan in their winter tanning bed.
I don't know what they're doing.
What are they doing?
I don't see much happening in the next couple episodes. This frustrates me, but...
Seriously, are they like Mongoloids or something?
They're... Okay.
I guess they want to leave open for the finale to come with a big bang.
Yeah, the finale is going to be jam-packed. By the way, Mei Chan is, from what I've heard, very qualified and a very good writer. So don't,
That's good.
Don't let her...
Do we know what other shows she's worked on?
I actually haven't heard of her from another show.
Mm-hmm.
I've never even looked up a writer.
Let me look her
show.
Up, actually. So the writer's affecting what happened. I don't know. I don't know. The only thing you can draw first, they may not be as important as we think a two-part episode would be. Okay, so here's what needs to be accomplished after 314, 315.
They need to end the stories with booming all these characters they introduce. They need to free up all these
towns. It has to be epic.
Epic, yes.
It has to be epic.
They have to free up all these
towns. Epic spelled with a K.
They have to restore the Earth Nation. They have to defeat the Fire Lord. They have to, get the prisoners free. They got a lot of stuff to do in very little time.
Yes.
It's like not studying for a test.
Like, everything is going to be open to the boiling rock.
God bless you.
I don't know. This is a stupid bet point here, because... can we draw anything from this discussion other than we have no idea what the episode's going to be about?
No, really.
Yes,
sorry.
Yes, as a matter of fact, we can.
The White Forces, is that it?
No. No, that's not it.
Oh, okay. Just
sure. The White Forces. Yeah.
Okay, so, last comments on the titles.
I think that we're going to see something... totally different in this, and yeah. I'm just gonna.
I completely agree. I think this is gonna be a new concept, something we've never heard of, a very new everything.
My inside source, LaTanya from Miami, told me.
LaTanya? What
After
the hell?
All,
from
it,
Miami.
We may be speculating on tying up things, but maybe it's just gonna bring a new thing in.
I'm sorry, but my source told me that we're gonna see something very good.
The one thing I don't think they'll do is bring new stuff in. I don't think we'll have.
If
many
they do
new
that.
Characters or they'll.
Well, something that might affect the characters, I don't know.
Something what?
That might affect the characters.
Yeah, that's true. And we do still need to see that villain who has a disturbing connection to Katara and Sokka's past, so...
Oh, yeah.
Maybe
we'll
get both
from the Water Tribe, depending on how you'd interpret Hama.
Well, no, because it was two... We've established it's two separate villains.
Wait.
Right,
maybe
no, I'm saying
maybe
that...
I know who it is. I know who the villain is. You ready for this? Gran.
Oh, that was very nice.
Yeah.
If I'm right, I'm gonna laugh so hard. If she's like this,
it's
mystical
gonna be
Gran.
She's gonna be the Fire Lord. She's actually Ozai.
Right. It's gonna be Katara's mom. You know, she's actually alive, and she's going to be the next villain. One more thing for her to have in common with Zuko, right, Zutara's?
No, I'm pretty sure that she.
There's Ursa's a villain too. What the heck?
No. Because see. Zuko has one parent who's good, Ursa, and one parent that's bad, Ozai, right? So Katara.
Or maybe Ursa's a villain who killed Katara's mom.
That would be interesting.
I'm still actually voting that was Luten that killed Katara's mom.
Luten killed it, wow.
Then it'll be like Degrassi, where it's just teenage drama and everybody's like trying to like bring each other down.
Okay, this is
Sorry,
gone on too
as
long.
The old person in the chat, I have no idea what Degrassi is, but hey, you know.
Isn't that
Sorry.
A show on N? Or something.
All I know is I saw one commercial and some girls walking around with a blue thong hanging out, so I didn't.
Okay,
really...
that's all for this segment. Let's move on to our discussion on the middle of season one. Today we will be continuing our segments recapping all of the episodes shown so far. The purpose of these is to find out the main theme of the episodes, which will help us speculate about the finale later on. Today we
and
will
that, my friends, keep going.
As soon as like a school class.
Yeah, I know.
Am I getting tested?
By the way, we're going to have some several English terms in here.
Yeah, I was going to say theme is a literary ailment. I was going to say that, my friend, is a literary ailment,
yes,
but you kept talking.
Motif and several. Okay, yeah, so today we will be discussing the middle of season 1.
Makes me feel smart.
Today we will be discussing the middle of season 1, which I've classified as 107 to 114, Winter Solstice Part 1, The Spirit World, to The Fortune Teller. So, these episodes, in my opinion, are the greatest of the series. I mean, you cannot beat The Storm and The Blue Spirit. I think
wrong.
I'd such a joy watching these again. These were
the middle of the season's good. The Great Divide was the worst episode ever.
That's a discussion topic.
I agree.
That's the first episode I ever saw. I almost never saw the show again.
Not there yet. Okay.
Fine. I'll say it quick.
We're not there yet.
We'll see.
You had said it already. We heard you.
Is it a joke? Do you see that line? It says... Okay, I actually didn't write that, but we'll get to it.
We'll see.
Yeah, so the quality for me, I mean, 107, 108, 107, my first episode ever. It's amazing, two episodes there. 109, I loved that. 110, 111, two pretty weak episodes, in my opinion. But then we get on to 112, 113, which easily could be argued for the best of the series. And then 114, which I think is the funniest of the series, easily. And great catting there. So, I mean,
Ka-tang.
I just love that whole thing. I just love this stretch of episodes, minus 110 and 111. So, what is everyone else's opinion of this stretch?
First off, I kind of liked 311 and 310 better than these, but you know.
You're comparing to season 3. That's a good job. Okay, other than Joe, also, any opinions?
Is the Storm in this one? Is the Storm
yes.
in that batch?
Storm
in I love the Storm. That was the first episode I saw, and I loved it. I love how deep it is, the fact that the villain isn't generally evil, and that's actually what drew me to Avatar, is the idea that a villain isn't completely evil. I just loved it.
Well, 107 and 108, they really got into the plot line. They got it moving, basically. But 9 and 10, it sort of got development and they were a bit weaker, but they were still good. Well, mostly 10 and 11, but 9. Yeah. And then 12 and 13 really got into the action a lot.
Bueller.
Really base action.
Bueller.
Okay, so I'm going to go over these episodes now one by one. Okay, so 107, my first episode. I got to see an Aaron episode first, which is great. You know, two things I want to point out from 107. There's two specific things that drew me into Avatar watching this. Because 107, first episode I ever watched, hooked right away. And here's why. Just the whole concept of the spirit world got me so much. And that's why I love the name of the podcast, From the Spirit World. It's just, this was the first thing that got me, like, interested. It's like, they have a whole separate world. It's the first time they even explore it is in this episode. And it's great there. And you know, there's one scene in 107, maybe my favorite ever. I mean, the scene where Aang is in the spirit world, and he goes up to Katara, who's waiting for Sokka to come back, and with Appa and everything, and he's just like, and he's says stuff like, "Don't worry, Katara, I'll come back soon." It's just that's what got me hooked on the Cat Aang right away, and it's so emotional, such an emotional scene there, and that was great with all the characters and everything there. Yeah, good job.
Can I just say something down quick?
Yeah.
Say Katang.
No, I don't say it like that. Okay.
No, say now. I just want you to say Katang.
Okay.
Here's why
it's Katang, because Katara is you take the cat from Katara and then you take.
But it's not Katara.
Well, it's not Ka either. So.
Well, here's what I think we should do. To make it really cool, we should say
Katang. Katang. It's Katang.
We should stress it.
Katang. It's Aang. See, that's why it's Aang. Aang.
No, we should like stress that.
No. Okay, so
Katang.
Then we get into 109. 109 had some of my favorite characters ever. John O'Brien episode, great. and we see... Hey, Jake's not here to argue with me about that. So, we see okay, I'm gonna call him the gay pirate, and it's like the first time you've ever heard that word.
Young man.
YMCA. So, see, he's gay pirate. I absolutely loved the gay pirate's character. He's so hilarious, and he had my favorite quote of the entire show when it's just randomly in the action scene where they're on the boat or something, and he threw Sako, one of the big guy threw Sako over, and he was like, "That's good," and it was like
yeah.
1 second. I've cracked up like.
I love the monkey. That was the best.
Oh, that.
That's what Iroh in the background with the monkey. What is it with gay pirates and monkeys?
I know, man.
And then that and the your own ship has set sailed. That was a great Iroh quote there, and maybe it should be a proverb.
I love it when he throws it and hits the guy like in the head.
Yeah, just John O'Brien episodes are so quotable. That's what I love about them.
I know.
You know.
And then we get in the Jet, which was my first new episode Jet, and
I did not like Jet.
I mean, I don't like episodes. As I've said this, I'll say this a million times. Right off the bat, like first time watching, I don't like episodes where it's not happy for the main characters. So
Jet's a loser.
I just see. We're gonna get into this, but. Jet is an episode that had almost no importance towards the end. I mean, who develops in Jet?
Katara.
Sokka.
Katara doesn't really develop.
That's what got me to
fangirl
with Sokka.
Yeah, Sokka kind of develops. I know, the scene that stuck out to Jet, I mean, maybe just because of the first new episode, but that whole instincts thing, that's like, that. I originally remember that being like 15 minutes, that whole discussion scene. I guess, not very good job on that. And James Egan, first time writer, only time writer, writing Jet. So you got another one there.
Are we supposed to really feel bad for this guy, though? Jet?
No,
I mean,
you're supposed to hate him at the end, which is interesting.
So what if his parents died? I mean, screw him.
And then we get into The Great Divide. I don't want to do this discussion yet, but yeah, why not? So, Great Divide is...
Sucks.
Highly regarded among the fandom as the worst episode of the series. And
no,
I did
a Never It's a Daydream to beat it.
I did a poll on Dongwu Fang. 703 people voted. Was The Great Divide the worst episode of the series? 430, 61% said yes. 279, 39% said no. And this was the results I expected. I mean, that's about right among the fandom. 60-40. So,
and I'd probably be about the only person in here who actually didn't hate it, but, you know.
Well, I don't know, I didn't hate it, okay.
I enjoy it.
Let me. Yeah.
It was the first episode I ever saw, I almost
okay,
never
tell
watched
that, tell that story, Joe.
So I turn on the TV, and, like, it's there, and I'm watching The Great Divide, and I see, like, cockroaches and stuff, and then I look at my hand, I'm like, yo. And then later I turn off the TV, and I'm like, I'm never watching this show again. And then I see the season one finale, and then I see that big monster kill a bunch of people. And I'm like, this is my kind of show. And then later when I download season one, and I'm like, man, this was the crappy show that I said I would never watch. Cool.
So, okay, so.
Yeah.
And the moral of the story is, don't eat spoiled potatoes.
Okay, so here's my opinion of The Great Divide. I think, okay, let me go over this. The beginning of the episode was very good. I actually liked it a lot. The whole contrast of the tribes, and... fitting Katara and Sokka into the separate tribes. Good start there. I mean, O'Brien started very well. The episode was still quotable, and it's great with their opposite stories.
But of course.
Then we get to the finish, and we get to Aang's ending story, which I hated, the whole baby thing. And
they crossed the bridge.
And then, you know, they're all friends at the end. But the one thing that took away from this episode completely was... Sokka saying, I only took their side because they fed me. That eliminates completely all Katara Sokka development that there's in that episode. So it's like, they just going along with them. They weren't really starting to go to polar, the opposite sides. So no Katara and Sokka development. Aang development was that he learned how to make peace more. That was the main point.
Which we got in the spirit world.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's developing further. It was necessary.
It's an iterator, and we didn't need
point,
it.
But we didn't need it in this episode. So what do you get out of this episode?
It iterated something.
Absolutely nothing. This was the main episode of the entire series. You could cut out, and it would mean nothing. And that is
absolutely.
And secondary. See, I did not see this episode. Katara saying that is so wrong to Aang at the end. Sorry, liking Aang being a bad boy. So yeah, that was great. I see, it's quotable. It's got its moments, but people consider it the worst because you can eliminate it and wouldn't do anything. See, other episodes in the series you can do that too. Like, what are my examples? 303, 307, and 110, which is Jet. You can pretty much take out, and there are other episodes you can take out, and it doesn't matter to the story. And 309, I guess.
True.
See, it's just the execution. So, I can't say this is... See, for me, this was my...
Cut out. Execution.
What?
Cut out. Execution.
I don't even remember what I said. But, see, this is like... This is my least, So, yeah, for me, I actually like Jet less than this episode. I mean... Jet, this episode is easier to watch than Jet for me. Something about Jet I didn't like a lot. And
oh, that's okay.
This episode isn't terrible. I mean, there are no terrible Avatar episodes, but this, in my opinion, is the worst of the good. That's I'm just trying to say. It's like, all of them are good, but this may be the bottom of it. And I'm saying that as a huge Sean O'Brien fan. So, okay, you want to take the opposite side, Elisa?
Well, from an animator standpoint, is why I mostly like this episode. The fact that when they're telling the different stories, telling the stories of the Ganjin, telling the stories of the Zhang, that they use the different animated styles, which is something that a lot of shows have actually done. I'll admit it, Powerpuff Girls, I did watch a little bit of
it. Oh,
yeah. I love that.
That my favorite episode of Powerpuff Girls is when the three girls are telling their version of the story to the mayor, and the fact that
different
versions are told with a different artistic style, and that's one of the things that I liked about this episode, is the fact that they were playing with this. Batman tried to do this, with one of their episodes, okay. But it wound up getting cut from the overall. So that, I think, just having the visual styles and saying, hey, you know, we can have fun with these episodes, we can take a break, and yes, this episode was filler, it can easily be the first episode cut from the movie, but I think it was still entertaining, it was still, like you said, it was definitely quotable. And one of the things is Aang's little story at the end. Well, it shows his creative thinking, his innovation, and it introduced us to the SD style, which gave us the animated shorts later on.
That's true, yes. Yeah, I agree. The different styles and the contrasting stories were... I loved those. That was probably my favorite part of the episode. So, I don't know, I just didn't... I didn't like Aang's resolution story. At first, it's, like, really babyish, but that's not... I don't know, it's just something that... Aang is showing his age, I guess.
I don't know. Abby, how do you feel about that?
It's random. Abby doesn't even know what we're talking about. Okay, so...
Because Abby keeps leaving every 2 seconds.
Oh, she's gone now. Again. Okay, so... Next is 112, The Storm.
Great episode.
It's great.
Yeah, my favorite part is when he redirected the lightning. I was like, "Faux shizzle."
Yeah, that was Iroh redirecting. That was probably the one thing that stuck out to me rewatching it. But I don't know. I actually think the writing was phenomenal. I had to say it because it was Lauren, my favorite director ever. Directing was a tad lacking. I mean, this could have been an extremely great episode, like up there among all time. But it a little lacking.
It still is.
But
yeah, getting struck by lightning and then redirecting it is pretty cool.
So we had all the flashbacks here. We learned about Aang on him running away, and we learned about Zuko and his banishment. And it set the tone for the rest of the series. I mean, it's great. So, yeah, no, there's not much to say about 112, actually.
Yeah, we learned about the next episode, we got to see them meet. So, that was pretty cool.
What?
Time for the mailbag.
No, we're not.
We learned about them, and then the next episode, we saw them meet. And so it's interesting to see them interact
after
we've seen all their past.
Yes, very true. And then we get into Blue Spirit, which is...
I love that one!
Many people love the Blue Spirit.
Zhao was great.
Zhao.
I love Zhao.
He was so amazing. He is
my second favorite villain in the entire series, and that's barely below Hama.
No, Zhao beats him by a lot. But see,
Hama.
Yeah, Hama.
Hama, sorry.
It's your
American accent showing through.
Yeah, so okay. Zhao is amazing this episode. The whole Zuko plot was amazing.
And hey, I think it was the first time we saw the Hawks since the pilot episode, I believe, too.
Yeah, I think so. But let's just think about this from a what got accomplished point of view.
Many things.
I mean, the middle of this episode, I mean, they had the huge action scenes and Aang getting locked up. Not much. I mean, I love it, but towards the middle it got a little repetitive-ish. But so
something interesting.
By the way, my favorite.
Right, you first.
Okay, yeah, my favorite part of this episode was Miyuki. Totally, Miyuki is my favorite character by far, and like.
Yeah, I hate cats. I swear to God. My grandmother used to have a cat. I used to dump water on it all the time. Every time it scratched me.
The herbalist was a great character.
So probably that's why it scratched you so much.
You're crazy.
Miyuki, hey, well, that,
that's right.
It should know where it stands. If it weren't my grandmother's, I would have like thrown it out and let it go stray.
Yeah, just Zhao's speech was phenomenal. Everything was great.
The superior element has captured the Avatar, or something like that.
Thing. So, Anna, this episode.
I would give it a 9. It was a little repetitive, I guess I'm trying to say.
Because they had the Blue Spirit theme, which was phenomenal. It's like the one theme in the show that sticks out to you, the different music. They just kept playing it over and over and over. The one theme that's. The one scene that sticks out for me this episode more than anything else is the theme where they're in the forest and Aang is talking about Kuza and his old friend and maybe we could be friends.
Forest.
And then Zuko comes out and shoots fire at him and Aang goes away in the trees.
I know, I love that scene.
That, like, sets the tone for the rest of Aang. And
yeah, I love the forest.
Forest.
The thing I liked about that scene was actually Zuko's hesitation while he pondered what Aang said before he initially reacted.
It was... It just showed the depth and they're developing. Maybe they could be friends.
Forest.
Water.
Water.
Radiator.
Radiator.
Okay, so...
Tomato?
Tomato.
Potato.
Chocolate.
Potato. Okay, so...
Coffee.
Chocolate.
And then we get into the fortune teller, one of my favorites of all time. I've watched it so many times.
Yay for Meng.
Meng, amazing. This episode had the single best ending ever.
I love that.
It's like, you know what it means, but then I eventually looked up the dictionary definition. It's like, they have that on Avatar. That was great.
And it had a Hitler speech, cramped. Why not?
Zhao's speech was just a different kind of
voice. I called someone that word a couple days ago.
So, in this episode, the Katara realization scene, one of the best in the series, the whole where he's like...
No, it didn't work out afterwards, either.
I guess he... what is it? I suppose he is.
I suppose he is.
Is the scene, fighting around. Amazing animation, by the way. No, it wasn't cheesy. This is the point in Aang Katara's relationship where it starts to shift to romantic from platonic.
Platonic,
yes. Of course, I'll go over this in the May 3-hour Cat Aang special, but... their relationship always, it has that element of romantic to it, but it doesn't really come out, and they're actually, they both have their little sides of romance on it, but it doesn't actually come out until this episode, and then it starts developing from there.
And me opinion, I think that Katara doesn't really like Aang as much as Aang likes her, because, you know, in 311...
Don't get me started on the Cat Aang.
In 311, they didn't really talk about the kiss at all.
Yeah, they're running away. But like,
the whole series
they've shown from Aang's point of view, not Katara's. And I've read so many fanfics lately from Katara's point of view. It's like has me wondering what is she really thinking. So
you know, I really think she's thinking. I think she wants to go out with Zuko. Because
definitely the enemy who she yelled at millions.
Katara's gonna happen. Yeah, she makes fun of him.
You say it the exact same tone every time. It's hilarious. So
but yes, this episode was absolutely. Hilarious. I loved, you know, I mean, I this isn't just fangirly, but I honestly did like Sokka's quotes, you know. They were hilarious, and a lot of that stuff kind of happened to me before, so.
Yeah, Sokka was very good in this episode. All the characters, and then just, what was it? Crucial you must contain, at this point, at this stage of the relationship, it's crucial you must contain maximum aloofness. That was one of my favorite.
Yeah, I love that.
You know,
Sokka giving dating advice. My favorite essay is like, I've kissed a girl.
Grand Grand.
Aw, doesn't count.
Yeah, exactly.
Grand, hey guys.
No.
Yeah, hey guys, I got it. You guys want to know what Duluth is? Communist government.
Yeah, it's like...
Oh!
Okay.
One way or another.
So yeah, this is how I've classified the episodes. Major plot development, 107 to 108. And 107 and 108 were kind of the turning points into this series. That's why I started the middle of the season there instead of a little deeper.
Right. If you look at the hero's journey, 107 and 108 are basically the call when the hero, in this case Aang, finally realizes the fact that he does have to do something, that there is a task for him to do, and this is the crossroads where he can accept to take the challenge or he can basically forget about it and not do anything. So this is definitely a crossroads. I mean, not until 107 really did the show kind of start.
Yeah, exactly. But Bumi presents Aang's general mission within 105, but it's not really until 107 when it narrows it down and shows exactly how hard his task is going to be.
Right.
He meets Roku for the first time there.
I love that one scene at the fortune teller when she's like, "Oh my, there'll be a great battle between good and evil." Oh, yeah, I know that. Just saying,
yeah,
I love.
I know that already. That was a great scene. And then the animations. JM did a great job. But yeah, so then I've classified character / relationship that other as most of them. So let's go one by one. 109 was character and relationship. Character development for Katara, kind of relationship development among the characters. It was general.
And also kind of her relationship with Aang developing a little bit, as the fact that she gets jealous of him, and the fact that how easily he learns things, picks things up, kind of, as we'll see later, mirrored with Zuko and Azula.
I don't really think that was more of their relationship, as it was more of just Katara's character. I think she would have got jealous out of anyone, I think. I don't know, I've narrowed that down to her character, and then we have relationship, like, among...
Well, you know, you look into Zuko these things a lot. That thing kind of just slipped my mind. Like, I didn't even think about it.
But most of all, 1-9 is pirate development.
Yeah, it's definitely pirate. It sets pirate. The foundations for Taka, even though she doesn't come.
Hey, and don't forget, there is, you know, blindfolded Haru in there, and that one's creepy.
Oh, man.
It's for one seconds, he comes in.
There's a one-armed Fire Nation man, and he's holding a bowl of rice with his one arm. How is he gonna eat it?
He slurps it in.
Okay.
See, one arm. This is a genius episode. 110 was character development, I guess. And then 111, none. And then 113, I've classified. What was 113? 113 was relationship development among Zuko and Aang, and character development among Aang. And 114 is, of course, relationship and character for like all of them. And then the past episode is 112. Seeing their Aang's past and Zuko's past now adds the equation. And we really get into Zuko's side of the story. So I think 112 is where we see that Zuko is actually going to play a major role in the story. It's not just like the villain.
So hey, I got a question, man. Is Zuko blind in one eye because of the fire?
No.
I was going to say, if he were, then him and Toph would make a perfect couple.
Zuko! So... Okay, so now we get into the main point of this. We're actually having a letter within this. Colin wrote and said that destiny is the main theme of 101 to 106. And that was what I was looking for last podcast. I couldn't think of it, because destiny was the main theme of 101 to 106. But then he went on to say destiny was the main theme of the entire show, which I actually disagree with. I think destiny is just a motif throughout the entire show. And I'm studying for my English exam, which is why I'm using these words. So yeah, it's and what's a motif? Motif is something.
If you keep using words like that, I swear to God, I will jostle you.
A motif is a reoccurring theme throughout the entire story.
Oh. Okay.
So, and I don't think destiny is what the plot hinges on. I don't think it's. I mean, it's there from the beginning, but I think balance is
closer to what maybe the main theme would be, because that's the whole purpose of. Is to restore balance, to maintain and restore balance.
So, Dylan, you want to be a loser.
Balance within love and hate, I think it would be. love and power. I say love and hate, that's a personal thing, but love and power is really where it is. So, what did we learn 107 to 111 major plot? It sets the story in line as we know it. basically.
That sets the essence
and
of Avatar.
And Zuko's angsty.
Zuko's angsty, yes. That's the most important point.
And it's actually, it's the introduction of the main villain for the story, assumedly, anyway. But the Fire Lord, not Zuko, not Zhao, which are so far the only villains that we'd seen up to this point, but now we have this mysterious villain who is strong, powerful, who breathes fire. Keep in mind, you know, Iroh was not the first one on the show to breathe fire. But it introduces this major villain for the show, and I think that's an important part about it.
Yeah, it introduces Ozai, very important. And
well,
it just sets foundations, and I'm... What is the main theme for 107 to 114? Let me think.
You know, all these villains are just very inveterate. You know that?
I don't know. I think that at the beginning, Ozai, like, dragged out his words.
Zuko, you're a failure.
He sounds like a ghost.
See, okay, so main theme of 107 to 114. They already... see, 112 is the foundations of the love power. I mean, that's where it really gets started, because Aang's past and Zuko's past, it's kind of all about love versus power. And I don't know, do I need to explain that? But is the rest of 107 to 114 love power? No. So,
well, the Blue Spirit, you could argue, is a continuation of the love power between Aang and Zuko, definitely.
Well, yeah, see, like, yeah, 112, 113, those are definitely...
Even you could argue 111 is, because here is, you know, the Ganjin, who preach love, and then the Zhang, which are power. So even in that, you could argue...
That wasn't the point of it, but yeah.
I'm still saying, you could argue it.
You could dig deep there, you could, actually.
Philosophical. Have you considered being a psychologist?
This is very good that we have you here, Lisa. You're almost as loquacious as Dylan.
What word did you just use, Joe?
Loquacious.
Loquacious. You just like using big words to try to make you sound smarter, don't you?
No, I have my vocab.
Plus, now the Philippification is different,
Joe. You were told me you were studying on a Friday night.
Okay, so no, please.
No, you told me you were studying on a Friday night, so I had to...
I'm not studying, it was a joke. But yeah, so...
Oh, I was going to say, you lose it.
It kind of sets the main themes in motion. It's Destiny, it brings back Destiny, it brings in love, power, and it also brings in it kind of does bring in balance to it. I mean, balance is there from the beginning, but it kind of expands on it a little more. So yeah, that's pretty much it. So as we will continue, the main theme is going to be an important part of our discussions, because the main theme is what we're going to try to base our finale speculation on.
I think we need to elucidate on the finale.
Elucidate. Thank you for that word, Joe. Okay, so any last comments? 107 to 114?
Nah, but there's an alacrity toward the mailbag in my case.
Alacrity. Oh, okay. So
Platypus bears for the win.
Oh, I completely agree.
Oh, yeah.
Jack
Sparrow made a cameo in Avatar. That's all I have to say.
Okay, so Gentler. Also in my opinion...
Hey, and Barbossa.
In my opinion, 112 started the greatest stretch of Avatar episodes within the series. 112
I concur.
To 120, my favorite of the entire series. And then,
I remember being absolutely floored when 112 aired, so...
Yeah, I don't even know if I remembered what to think. So my first two new episodes, Jet, and then The Great Divide, so yeah.
Because I had watched the show from the very beginning, and I remember at 112, I was definitely floored.
Yeah, it's like a huge turning point there. The storm easily can be considered the greatest episode of the series. But yes.
No, go get water.
So yeah, it's one twelve to 209. I think that is my favorite part of the entire series. I hate where they go after 209. I mean, the plot is good. I just don't like the general concept. And this is just where, when I think of Avatar, I'm going to think of 112 to 209, and it's great.
Yeah. So, I think we need to shut the mailbag, because I got a vehement, somnolent feeling right now.
Okay, let's shut up with the vocab. So, yeah.
I'm not making fun of you.
Let's move on to our mailbag segment. The mailbag segment is where we'll answer questions you guys send in on Avatar and address comments on the podcast. You can send questions to podcast@dongbufeng.net. because of limited time, I'll not be able to address every letter sent to me. But I do read all of them, and I read all of what's in the letters, so don't hesitate to send a letter in, just because I might not read it. So let's start with Shay.
Shay.
Katang Zero writes, if Ursa comes back, what will her role be? And if she, and will she, and would she still be Fire Lady at the end of if Zuko is made Fire Lord, sorry.
Well, that would be a little creepy if Ursa was Fire Lady with Zuko being there, because that would mean he'd kind of have to marry his mom.
Ew, Oedipus Rex.
Well, not necessarily. He could actually advocate the throne to her.
Well, I'd also have to say that I did not like Oedipus because I didn't like the books, so therefore I don't like that idea.
So...
That's old literature humor for you.
Zuko definitely has an Oedipus complex.
Iroh is the Fire Lord, and Ursa marries Iroh.
I'm reading Destiny's Call right now, actually, by Leslie, and all the Katang people know that.
I'm reading To Kill a Mockingbird.
Read that. Oh my gosh! Yeah.
I hate that book. I swear to God, I want to burn it.
Okay, so
I hated it. Scout Finch. Awesome. You tell me what kind of name is Scout? Name a girl something like Trisha or something. If you're going southern,
your name's Jean Louise.
Jean Louise. Jean Louise.
Okay, shut up. The only Jean I know is Billy Jean. Okay. So, basically, if Ursa comes back, what will role be? It's a very good question. I have no idea. I don't think she's coming back.
In a lot of, even, I'd say Egyptian more than Chinese, the Fire Lord's wife, in this case, so basically the Pharaoh's wife or the Emperor's wife, can in fact actually rule the country in the stead of her son. In Egypt, there was Nefertiti, who actually basically completely took over the throne from her son. She had to dress like a man, certainly.
Ursa could be Fire Lord, but she wouldn't be Zuko's Fire Lady. It's like,
right. She would not be married. She'd basically be taking over, and Zuko would choose then to do something else with his life.
It could be a possibility if she's already in the story by now, but I don't see that happening. I don't see her coming back. I mean,
Elisa, what will we do without you?
Yeah.
I could bring up Mary Queen of Scots as well, who is also
she could take over the throne, but it's not gonna happen, I don't think. So yeah, if Ursa comes back, where will be, we'll see, I guess.
If she does come back, I think it would actually be just a minor role, maybe just kind of as an encouragement, and that would basically be it.
And Zuko motivation, yeah. Ruth?
Eric writes, what do you think the Southern Water Tribe is now like? The Paku and the some other waterbenders have gone to rebuild it.
Well, I'd love to see in this 1 month later epilogue when Katara and Aang are living in the Southern Water. No. So yeah, the Southern Water Tribe's a huge Katang location. But what do you think it's like? I think it's in development. They can't rebuild it right away. That's the problem. They don't just rebuild.
They have to reunite it first.
Yeah.
You know what my answer is to this? There are some things we just don't know. And when we don't know these kind of things, we turn to Law and Order SVU.
Oh, yes. Okay. So, I don't know. It's probably not. It hasn't made much progress because they have to have, like, men there and
have
husbands back.
On Nick.com, they actually say that Sokka and Katara's village is one of many in the South Pole. That after, basically, the invasions and after Hama and all the rest of the waterbenders were kidnapped, that the water tribe in the South Pole split up into smaller settlements. And so that's something that Paku and hopefully Katara and Sokka will have to do is reunite the South.
Oh, wow. I never thought of there being more than one Southern Water Tribe. Wow. I guess I need to read Nick.com more often. Wow, that makes too much sense, even.
And, of course, also, like, they might have to bring the Northern Water Tribe to Southern to rebuild the waterbenders and stuff.
Yeah, need more.
Oh, man.
So they could reunite the South and through the South or through the North. So right now, the status is right now of the Southern Water Tribe, probably not much progress, but eventually, yes.
Utah is going to happen.
That's very related. Okay.
Yeah, no. I'm doing the next one.
Okay, this is me. No, this is me.
Ruby Swift. I love that name.
Ruby Swift writes, so she has a really long email. and I actually did read it all. It was very, very interesting, very good. She goes in depth relating Fire Nation to a country in our world that's not the U.S. She compares them to Japan, Germany, England, China, a lot of different countries. And the point she's trying to make is that Fire Nation's not necessarily the U.S. It also has similarities, even more so, to a lot of other different countries. And yes, that's true. It's more so political. Like a lot of other countries. I was just, because the point she was countering my technical revolution point. Other countries have had.
Right. There was actually evidence that China had an industrial revolution back during the 1500s.
Yeah. See, it happened other places, but I'm in U.S. history right now, so I'm going to like connect to the U.S. first. It's just like me thing. So
make a political thing. Like I'm proud that you made this political because that's what I do. I mention politics,
and you're not going to right now because So basically, just ignore my comments to be like the U.S. We could go on for hours, but
The U.S. is a great country.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, they didn't make the Fire Nation look bad. The only episode where they even showed propaganda was 102 was 302, and the rest was like, why is it such a bad thing? It seems like a normal place. So I don't know if they did an effective job communicating the propaganda within the Fire Nation.
I think that the Fire Nation is probably good. They're just probably like some guys who had a really tough.
Bad at the top. I don't know. They didn't seem like bad people.
If you had that much power, you think you'd be not corrupt? Come on, let's be honest.
Power corrupts people. It's true.
Did you ever read, the thing of absolutism?
We'll get to power in that, yes, with Bronco.
Okay,
is Joe's favorite word pimp? Yes,
it is. No, it's in my top 10.
Well, I just want to know, then, if the reason that Joe's favorite word is pimp, is that the reason why it's filtered in the chat?
Yes, it is. That's exactly why.
First off, it's not my favorite word. It's in my top 10. My favorite words I can't say here because, that's too controversial.
So, okay. I'm surprised. I'm actually surprised. Like, I say a lot, and you don't really filter that.
No, I told my class president that you played for the other team today.
Oh, God. Okay, so...
It was great.
She also writes, do you think we're going to find out more about Katara and Sokka's mom? We actually went over this a little, but, yes, we'll almost definitely find out more about her with the disturbing connection to Katara Sokka's past villain.
Hey, maybe we'll see her in a flashback in some sort of swamp.
Return to the swamp, yes. It's secretly 316, but I wasn't supposed to leak
them. Yeah, I would laugh so hard if they took, the first 10 minutes of one episode that everyone hated, The Great Divide, and they put that as, 316, and then they totally just change it to be something totally irrelevant about something else.
That's
and they
like, psych. Okay, so...
Lindsay Lohan. Lindsay writes, so I have two questions. That's one more than one. First off, how do you all feel about the Avatar movie? I hate it. Being live action.
Don't insert your comments in. Go.
Do you think it'll be fake looking or, above all, absolutely cool and creative like a Speed Racer movie
look? Okay, stop there. First of all, the Speed Racer movie looks really crappy.
Does it? I have not even looked at it.
It's the preview. I mean, it's so random. Hey. It's like bright lights. It makes it look cool, but it's not cool. It'll be I think it'll be creative. It's definitely creative. But I actually think live action. I like the experiment. I like Shyamalan. I'm definitely looking forward to the movies.
The thing I'm worried about with Shyamalan is actually the animation for the creatures. I actually haven't seen Signs all the way through because my animation teacher showed me the ending of Signs where you finally get to see, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but the animation in that at the end of Signs was absolutely horrible.
Horrible.
Sure, in Lady in the Water, the animation, the effects in that were a lot better compared to Signs. So I'd be worried about the studio choice that you'd be making for any of the special effects.
Yeah, I think Lindsay actually said
that. Go to Pixar.
The bending and the creatures are what she was worried about there. So I actually think the bending will be pulled off very well. I think they're going to find out a way to do the bending well.
I don't know, but I'm going to think it's going to look very funny. Like, imagine doing bending in real life. Doing that out in public and seeing if people just call you like the H word. I mean, come on. It'll be so funny to watch.
No, and then, the creatures could be a problem, yeah. I don't know how they're going to do that.
Well, and also,
this might just be a rumor, but I heard that he wasn't going with the show. He was going completely off show script, so that might be a problem as well.
What's the plot? No, they're going. The first movie is going to be on season one. Second movie is going to be on season two. Third movie is going to be on season three, and it's going to be exactly like the show. People are starting rumors because they don't like the movie idea.
And the casting that also might be a problem. For all we know, he's the type of people that should not be in it. I don't know.
If you read the season 2 DVD, he said that he's going to get newcomers for the roles, and along with that, he'll probably have experienced people playing the adults. So
I would like to actually see if the prison makes it in, or even if it doesn't, I would like to see George Takei reprising his role as the warden, because he's just awesome.
Yeah. And his voice is amazing.
As cool as all the series, I think we should finish Lindsay's question.
Sure, go.
Second.
But no one can play a better Zhao than Jason Isaacs. Sorry, had to say that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Okay, go.
Second, how do you think Ty Lee and May will fit into the rest of the season, including the one shot at Comic-Con of May and Zuko? I have a theory that they will really be Ty Lee and May who take down Ozai. Pressure points, ability to stop Bendy at all. What do you say to that?
Ty Lee's only appeared in one episode, as we know. They're going to have a role in the rest of the season, and I think it's going to be before the finale. And I have reason to believe that I think they're going to be a specific episode, which I won't mention. But it's interesting. I don't know how they'll exactly fit in. They're going to be in one more episode, but
3:14.
They're not going to be in the finale. They're not.
They'll free the prisoners.
I don't think so. But I think they remain.
See, it's that reaction faithful. Right there that just confirmed it. Because
no.
I knew.
No, I think. Yeah, I think.
You were just so nonchalant about it that I knew that means that I was right on the money. I said nonchalant.
I just accidentally. Whoa, that just freaked
you out. You just called him not smart?
I just accidentally whistled.
I said nonchalant. Okay. Yeah. Which means.
I don't think they'll switch sides right away. I don't know, but they're not taking down Ozai. They're not going to have a major role in the finale. But who knows?
Yeah, didn't you see the part like in 3:11 where Zuko didn't kill his dad because he said that's the Avatar's destiny?
Yeah.
I mean, because he easily he owned him. Like he was like Wazam, and
he owned him definitely.
And he was like, oh man, oh coming from the 6-0, and then all that.
Then that makes
he could have easily shot lightning at him and taken him down, but he didn't.
Okay. So, I have no idea. And that whole screenshot of Mei and Zuko, we'll see. I have no idea. Okay, so, Elisa, next.
All right, James Wright. Technically, are Katara and Sokka the princess and princess of the Southern Water Tribe? Now, I know that certainly they don't think of themselves as such. See the Siege of the North and the... Waterbending Master. But if Yue was the princess of the Northern Water Tribe simply because she was the daughter of the chief, by the same logic, it should work the other way around. Because Sokka and Katara are the children of the Southern Water Tribe chief.
It's different. Katara and Sokka both said that they're peasants in there.
Right, and going back to the fact that on Nick.com it says that there is more than one Southern Water Tribe settlement.
Yes, so it's... Okay, here's the... Yeah, exactly. It's the difference in system of government. In the Northern Water Tribe, chief is pretty much a higher rank than chief in the Southern Water Tribe. So chief is like king, I guess, but not really. It's basically a king within the Northern Water Tribe, which is why Yue gets to be a princess. But then the Southern Water Tribe chief is just like chief of battle. It's nothing... I'm pretty sure it's nothing more than that. So
they don't have a royal.
They seem kind of they kind of have anarchy. Maybe I'm thinking anarchy.
No, I don't think so. But
well, it definitely
they
seems
do have
that
leaders to take care of things, but they don't have a royalty system.
Right. Hakoda was actually chosen to be chief not because of his bloodline, but because of the fact that he has skills. He has the ability to lead people, which we saw in the invasion. That he is
so
charismatic.
It's
exactly. It's
so maybe
it's
a democracy.
It's not the bloodline there for Katara.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily a democracy, but maybe there's a set And it's like, well, this guy's really good, so what do you guys think about him? And not necessarily, like, once he's in charge, he's not going to let everybody else vote. But as far as choosing the leader goes, it's definitely the whole tribe is going to choose who the leader is. And that's similar to other Native American cultures and tribes.
Yeah.
And
that's what democracy is, letting the people...
And Southern Russia is based on Inuits, so yeah. Exactly. We answer that. Okay, no, is this mine? No. Back up to...
It's mine.
Shay.
It's Loch Ness.
Shay for Loch Ness Lake.
This is Lake. Okay.
Loch Ness Lake Worm writes, what character out of the Aang gang do you hate the most? Sokka, Katara, Aang, and Toph. If you want, you can add Zuko in there, assuming that he got accepted by the gang.
I'd have to say Aang because he's a complete idiot.
Joe, I don't understand how you hate the main character of the show. But
simple. How could you not hate the main character of the show?
I love Aang.
No, I mean, seriously, how does he lose? He's given, like, his infinite power, and where he could just be like Shazam.
Don't have that much pressure on you, and you have to master everything in, like, 3 months.
Okay, it's just like being able to drop an atomic bomb on someone when people are hitting you.
And he's 12.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, but seriously, okay, these people are, answer, like, falling
answer,
a mat.
My answer in this is Zuko, obviously, but... not Zuko, Sokka, I guess. You can't. I love Katara and Aang, and you can't hate Toph, so I guess Sokka's that.
Actually, my least favorite character out of the Aang gang is probably Toph. I've never really been fond of her at all. Her, the whole, I'm a master earthbender.
Yo, guys, I gotta go, so peace.
Okay.
Me, I'm guessing it would be Sokka. No, I'm kidding. Actually, Katara, just because, I like her and sometimes, but, you know, if I have to choose, if I'm forced to, probably Katara, just because she's sort of, I don't know. If I had to choose, it'd be her, for some reason.
I'd say, for me, of the gang, I like the guys. I like Aang, I like Sokka. Of course I like Sokka. Sokka's, like, one of my favorite characters.
Yay, roar!
I like Toph. I like Zuko if he joins the gang. Toph, I liked my initial opinion of her, but that might have come from the fact that I actually did miss the first 10 episodes of season 2 because I was in college without cable. So when I did see Toph, the thing I liked about her is when she fell down and made the rock angel when they actually got out of the sand and onto the solid rock. And that, I thought, was something that was really cute and endearing about Toph. But as I got to see more of Toph, she's a little too standoffish. And for me, I think I would like to see more scenes of her when she opens up and she relates. Those are the scenes when I start to like Toph. But throughout the most of it, I'm just kind of like, you know what, lighten up a bit.
Toph's character is pretty one-sensical, but I don't know. I think that... her stubbornness or whatever you call that. I don't know. I think that just makes her lovable, I guess.
Her stubbornness is, like, understandable because how she was raised. It's just I don't like a lot of the kind of humor she brings to the show. You know, it's kind of obnoxious.
I liked her.
Well, that's a good argument. It's tough.
I admit. I liked her at the beginning. I admit, you know, she was really cool, and I thought that they would dig a bit deeper, maybe, but I don't know.
No, nowhere else to go. That's good. Okay, now we get into the deep one. Okay, Branko writes, your reveal of the love power theme to the finale does not spoil anything. It invites more curiosity and discussion, the climax, and everything that came before it. It begs me to ask a few questions. One, must Aang choose between love and power in order to defeat Ozai? Or two, must he conquer the pitfalls of love and power together?
The second one, because one thing that...
No, I gotta explain this, because also what he writes in the email later is that power isn't necessarily evil and love isn't necessarily good, and it brings up valid points that power and love both have their ups and downs, but what I personally relate power to hate and love to love, which is my number one belief or whatever. Love, good, hate, bad. So it's...
I... Sorry.
I think it's the second. I'm sorry for interrupting. I think it's the second one, just because one thing that the show also a theme is balance, being able to balance, you know, goofiness and that. So how can it be a contradiction to have to choose instead of balancing them both out? Sorry.
So how to answer this? Okay, power in the situation. Aang's choice will be, I think this choice will be during 319, is choosing between the Avatar state and Katara. And he already made the choice once, he's make it again. Because, and in this situation, you can't, this isn't a choice of conquer, you take one, take not the other. Are you going to give up the girl you love, the love in your life, like everything there, to try to restore balance and take the world better? Or are you going to try to, you can do it on your own, you can defeat them with love. But so it's more of number one, just from this specific situation. Other of these, like, love and power is not just a Katara Avatar state thing. It is the theme throughout the entire show with Zuko and even Toph, Sokka,
May even.
May, yeah. It's just the entire thing. So two more for everyone else, but the specific decision is more of one. And it's the resolution kind of blurs the line between one and two, which is, I don't know, I can already tell you, people aren't going to like the resolution because it doesn't make much sense. I mean, not that I know what it is, but there is no resolution to this specific problem that's going to satisfy all ends of this, because you can't completely eliminate power and take in love because he's the Avatar, and you can't completely eliminate love and go power because he has such a strong attachment to Katara. So
I, for one, would actually be kind of disappointed if everything was wrapped up neat with a little bow. Just because of the fact that the show is striving for an element of reality, the fact that it's got the emotional ties to everything, and tying it up in a neat little bow is one of the things that always drives me mad about other animated shows, because every episode has to tie up with a neat little bow, and Avatar doesn't do that, so I don't see why they would do that with a finale, and I would be disappointed if they did.
See, that brings in consequences of Aang's decision. Because, look at this realistically. What is Aang going to choose? What does he have to choose? It's 318 before the final battle. What does Aang choose?
Right.
Either Katara.
Avatar
state?
Answer. Like, what do you guys think Aang would choose?
Either Katara or the Avatar state? I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably he'll find a way maybe to do both or something, Avatar State.
Yes, Aang has to choose Avatar State. It's a forced decision. I mean, that's how it's going
to
go.
Well, what's he going to do if he chooses Katara rather than the Avatar State? That doesn't exactly help anything. By saving the world, he's also saving Katara, and exactly, whatever happens after that happens.
That's what it'll determine. But it's like, he's going to choose Avatar State. I mean, this is speculation, people. Don't quote me. I mean, quote my speculation, but it's not spoilers. It's based off spoilers, but it's not spoilers. So it's, but you see, I think Aang has to choose the Avatar. He's going to be forced to choose it, but the resolution will lean more towards love. So, could consequence be that the power side is eliminated? Like, what I'm saying is, one of the only consequences I can think of is the Avatar state not being there anymore. But that's why is that a consequence? Because he chose power originally. He gets love back as a reward for something that Aang develops throughout the entire show. And this is getting more into our discussion later, so I don't know, I kind of want to leave it off at that.
Okay.
So it's very, this is the most complicated thing of the entire show. This is what I consider to be the main theme, the deciding factor in the finale. And we will definitely have a whole topic on this and discuss. And once Jake's here, me and him go back and forth on this for hours. That would be great. Okay, so let's just close things out. Okay, that's all for this week's podcast. Send your questions to us at podcast.goofang.net. Send us Avatar questions to the mailbag segment. And, yeah, that's it. So I've been your main host, Dylan. Co-hosts have been List. Shay. Ruth. Steph. Alisa. Kevin. Joe. And Abby. Technical director, AJ Kevin. Musical remixes by Luke Tripp. I edit. Dongwu Fang's owned by Jake. So next week, I got my schedule out, we'll be discussing the end episodes of Season 1, 115 to 120.
Yeah, Jong Jong.
Jong Jong. And we'll have a segment to be determined. I think I have something planned. We'll figure something out. So, yeah. Interesting next week what I come up with for that. So, yeah, a very good discussion on the finale. So, comments on anything we discussed? Random stuff?
Booyah from Zimbabwe.
Second podcast throw the Zimbabwe mention. Oh yeah.
So, okay, come on.
So yeah, great job, Alisa, today. Welcome back. Rest of the weeks, did great. Balancing out my you kind of took on the role of Kevin, which actually interesting having you and both Kevin here in the beginning. So yeah, let's go out on a unison one. Let's do a unison. The Great Divide rocks. How about that? 1, 2, 3. Great Divide rocks.